Hello, this is the Moonifest Destiny podcast, number 7. Moonifest Destiny is a novel I wrote in 1991. My name is Peter Gelman. The subtitle of the novel is The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas. It's available on Kindle with illustrations for 99 cents around the world. Chapter 6, Fireflies. Since during the months camped in the 60-mile valley of Annex Agonies, we lost about 100 men to desertions, it was hardly a wonder to me that over the weeks camped on the cold sea, a few dozen foreign-borns, mostly leprechauns from Phobos, the green moon, that suffered so much under the tyranny of great Deimos, who had knocked a big crater in the northern end of the former, seemed fit to swim the river toward the hot-blooded hospitality of moonish womenhood. Several of those deserters drowned and washed back to our side, and in fact two culprits swimming south were shot by our sentries back in April, Henry Lamb and Carl Gross. It grieved me sorely. It also grieved me that the Lunaritas were now nowhere to be seen. They sure were cute, them funny Lunaritas, with their dark braids and their sweet round faces, so soft and gentle, and quite kissable. Oh, but I was married now. Gone were the days of spyglass ogling them, bathing in the frigoris. Gone were the most friendly exchange of bows and curtsies. Gone were the shy smiles and the long dark braids. Then it was I started to realize exactly how hard and how lonely was this juggernaut chariot called marriage. I stood sentinel on the ramparts of Fort Slowpoke, wondering where they went to. Were they hiding in convents? Were they hiding in the mountains? Ah, Sarah dear, I told myself, you have married a sinner. Right next to me, our electromagnetics hung over the parapet, all hooked up to the galvanic caissons, poised and ready to manufacture the most democratic progressive ball lightning to pound the church plaza and promenade wall of Plato's crater. Once a Lunarita favorite constitutional, now the fortifications for the same cannons that lost Waterloo. And I asked myself, am I really married? Is there really going to be a war? And if either question were true, why? Were we justified in calling this lunar crescent a mere peninsula of Texas? Was I not a hypocrite calling myself a husband without reforming my sinful ways? Kelly paused near melancholy me. So stout and strong was he in his shiny lieutenant's uniform, not too shabby because he paid for it himself. And to melancholy me, he said, look at all those fireflies we need to swat, Jack, tapping his Ivanhoe against his palm. A few lights showed in Plato's crater, but thousands upon thousands glowed in the fields of dust of the lunar beyond. Major Jacob Brown stood on the high bastion, scouting the enemy with his spyglass, and overhearing my brother, nodded sadly. He ambled two steps toward us and stopped, murmuring softly, fireflies. Youth is full of the bluster of immortality, and for that I thank our Maker. It is a hard lot to roll our Republican wagon through the graveyards of kings, savages, and despots. For my generation, youth seemed but an admixture of strife, hard life, and hope for future recompense. But I am getting on now. He smiled softly and ran his hand over his bald head. I've been a soldier 30 years. 30 years. Can it be so long since I left Massachusetts? Yes. I'm almost an old man then, and I fear that man's lot is vanity. Vanity. You and your generation, Lieutenant, shall learn that war is not a Walter Scott affair, and I fear that knowledge will come all too quickly. To me, our purpose here is to see that you and your children inherit the full promise of the work begun by our founding fathers with such sacrifice. We stood in silence a moment. I felt solemn and resolved, come what may. I saw my brother's shining eyes and knew that he too was strangely stirred. That sad, proud, sublime moment passed. Dust devils corkscrewed out of the dust yard of the fort and clawed at our resolute faces until we winced. Major Brown screwed his eyes tight shut and with fingers pinched his nostrils. When the dust devil passed, he straightened, cautiously sniffed, and cheerfully recommended we'd best get on with digging that bomb-proof. That long, fateful night, a stranger arrived. Okay, thank you for listening. That was a short chapter. As always, forgive my imperfect reading. I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm not as good as other narrators, but appreciate your patience with me. And I want to mention that this work is protected by the Creative Commons non-commercial license. Now, earlier chapter mentioned the song Green Grows the Laurel, and it will come up again later. I just want to read you the first stanza. I think there may be different versions to the stanza, but here's one that I know. Green grows the laurel, and soft falls the dew. Sad was my heart when I parted from you. And in our next meeting, I hope you'll prove true. Never change the green laurel for the red, white, and blue. I have not researched the origins of the song, and I've seen that a lot of people think it's Irish, and a few people says it has a different origin. But with those words, it seems to speak from an Irish perspective. Many of the soldiers of the U.S. Army at that time were Irish-born, and the Army provided a easier method of gaining citizenhood. The song was quite popular, and what does green grows the laurel sound like? Green grow, from a Mexican perspective, green grow, does that make you think of anything? Green grow. Okay, thank you very much for listening.